we were standing there, and you're saying the logs were up this high, which they're not at this point, but you were explaining, and what happened?
Well, Linda, it was there was a pile of logging debris there that they'd piled up with bulldozers to burn in the wet season, and that's what prevented me from getting any closer to the craft. I'd just gone to get a closer look, and that was about as close as I could get. But when the sound it was making suddenly got louder and it started to move, that startled me. And quite a bit of the tension that was building was because the rest of the crew in the truck were screaming at me to get away from there. So I ducked down and forward behind this log.
And at that point, when we were standing there together, I said, what did that sound like? And you tried to mimic it for me, and it was eerie. Can you do that right now for the
Well, question? I don't know. It was a sound that, like nothing I'd ever heard. It was off the range of human hearing on the low and the high end. Some of the men in the truck said they could feel it vibrating the truck. And
that's right. You went, whoa. Like it was a low, very, almost a pulse.
You could feel it in your body more than hear it, actually. And they said that it seemed like something was building, like something was about to happen. And I'm thinking now that maybe it was some sort of a static charge that was building, some sort of a side effect of the propulsion. One of the men, Dwayne Smith, later became an electrician, and I talked to him years later, and he said to him it sounded like high voltage when I was hit.
Well, you're down on the ground, and then you're hearing that sound. And I remember you thought this was kind of ominous, building up to something. And then what do?
Men were really anxious and screaming at me to get away from there, but I didn't really need to be told. When it started to move, I jumped down into a crouch, and I decided to sprint back to the truck, and that's when I raised up. And at that point, that's when I was, my upper body was closest to the craft. And that's when this blast of energy came out of it and hit me. And
you told me that you'd played football, and that when that light came out of that craft, it felt like you'd been tackled with a helmet right into your chest.
Yeah, like I'd been blindsided. It's just a really stunning sort of like a physical blow, but at the same time, a little bit like an electric shock. But the crew said that, one of the guys said it threw me back 10 feet. When another guy was telling me the other day that it looked like 20 feet to him. But, you know, the idea was that the way my body flew through the air and hit the ground limp, they were all certain it had killed me.
And do you remember it going black?
Yeah, I just felt this numbing shock and I was out. And,
okay.
And naturally, you know, they thought he'd killed me. And so, you know, I find no fault with them that they took off because they thought they were next.
They left you, though, Travis, didn't they?
Jeez. Yeah, George. But, you know, I can't blame them for having done that. Some people have criticized them, but why should they risk their life to save a dead man, you know?
And, George, one of the things that we're going to get into in this half hour and the next is that over these years, now we're in 2011, Travis thinks that it is really possible that he died there in those logs and that we are talking about a resurrection story. And that's where we're headed.
Okay.
But you end up becoming conscious in a very strange room where there are three marshmallow white beings with what you've described as kind of large dark eyes, but you could see pupils in them, not like the black, glassy, gray eyes. These
Correct.
Were different kinds of beings. They were wearing red jumpsuits, and they came toward you, and then you picked up some kind of an object on a table or something that was there, and you raised it. You used that beautiful graphic in your book to illustrate this, and as you threatened to hit them, they left. And what were you doing when the very next thing that comes into that room is not a marshmallow-skinned anything? It is a 6'2" blonde-haired, muscular male with a transparent helmet on. What in the world were you doing before then?
Well, when I managed to scare them away, if that's why they left, I moved to another part of the craft, and this human-looking person came in, and I was fiddling with buttons and controls to try to see if I could open a door. Not the most wise course of action.
Well,
but
you describe it was like a planetarium, and you would push something, and the stars would rotate.
Yeah, which was quite disorienting because they were all around me. But when this human-looking man came in, I immediately just assumed he was someone, you know, from some Earth agency that was there to rescue me from this situation.
Well, I'm on page 104, quoting from your new book. I thought that this was a beautiful description to help the Coast audience understand. He had coarse sandy blonde hair of medium length covering his ears. He had a dark complexion, like a deep, even tan. He had no beard or mustache. In fact, I could not even see stubble or dark shadows of whiskers. He had slightly rugged, masculine features and strange eyes. They were a bright, golden, hazel color, but there was something odd about those eyes besides their color that I could not quite identify, unquote. Could you try tonight to try to explain to the Coast audience, looking back, what is it that you think was in those eyes that faced something that was so odd?
Well, you know, I've tried and tried to try to figure out what that was. I can't quite put my finger on it. And working with an artist, I was, you know, at a loss to try to explain what this was. The oddness of the color, you know, maybe, or maybe something artificial, like some eye covering of some kind. Whatever it was, I never could quite figure out what that was. Although, you know, this was something odd that caught my attention at the same time. If these people were to be seen in a crowd, I doubt they'd draw any sort of attention other than just being people.
But did those eyes scare you?
It was one of the things that really stuck with me. The nightmares that I had were the original marshmallow looking beings that predominated the nightmares that were in the immediate aftermath. But as those sort of subsided after a long period of time, a lot of my dreams were more about the human looking ones, but not so much with so much fright as the memories, the dreams didn't come back to me completely. It was quite fragmented. I, as a matter of fact, there were some times when my wife would say she could hear me struggling in my sleep, and then I'd wake up and I couldn't recall the dream at all. So, you know, even if these memories are coming back in dream form, somehow there was still some kind of a blockage in being able to, you know, bring these, you know, to my conscious once I was awake.
Well, it sounds to me like at first you thought maybe it was an astronaut because it had on that transparent helmet. But when you looked into those gold eyes, it was clearly not human in the eyes.
That was disturbing, but, you know, it still wasn't alarming enough to where I didn't go with him and assume that he was taking me into a, you know, a refuge, some rescue, because, you know, my greatest fear at that moment was these little beings that I awakened to.
And one of the most interesting things about your story is that in almost all of the abduction cases, whether they're white or gray or blonde or whatever the description, they appear to have very refined control on human behavior. And yet in your case, you seem to be able to act, move those knobs, make the stars spin, the marshmallows come in, you raise, you're going to threaten them. They leave the room, the blonde comes, and you're still not being able to communicate. It raised this issue of what do you think, why were you able to become conscious and they couldn't control you?
Yeah, to even regain consciousness at all. And lately it occurred to me that it might have been due to some sort of injury from being hit in the head and chest by this beam that sort of scrambled the wiring there that made their efforts to control me,
ineffective. What were you feeling? Because you've had this beam. Did you become conscious with a sense of pain, ache, nausea, like you would normally on the earth if you'd been subjected to something like that?
Oh, yeah. I was in so much pain. I was struggling to breathe. I just couldn't seem to get enough air. And, you know, this small, dimly lit room, this claustrophobic situation is what sort of triggered the panic, especially the inability to breathe. You know, nothing will make you panic more than that.